Welcome to Casual Watch Talk, the podcast from the Casual Watch Reviewer YouTube channel. Join us as we talk everything watches, from watch collecting, the latest horology news and interviews. If you're not already subscribed, subscribe on your favourite podcast app. Let's dive into the show. Hello everyone, welcome back to episode 39 of Casual Watch Talk. You're here with Sam and Chris again. How have you been, Chris?
Pretty good, hanging in there.
I wonder if we're going to do something special for our 40th episode. Oh no, I'm actually making more work for myself there.
Yeah.
I'll have to think of something. And I am turning 40 this year as well.
Yeah, so we're going to do 40 on 40. That's what we're come up with something.
40 on 40. We can't do our top 40 watches. That would be quite the chore to listen to.
No, I'll do... I'll do 40 with 4 years of experience. How about that?
Well, we've got some interesting news subjects to talk through, and also some feedback we kindly received on email that we want to address, because in the last episode, I think we got a few things factually wrong, which I think is consistent for most of our episode, Chris.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. It's casual watch talk. Yeah, casual watch talk, incorrect F1 talk. That's
Yes, casual watch talk, incorrect F1 talk.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
But before we kicked off, last time I did a little shout out, Chris, to some people that are listening to the podcast in other countries. Mm-hmm. And at the time, there was quite a few people in Sweden listening.
You had mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, big thanks to all of our Swedish fans. Well, Sweden has now been topped by both Canada and Australia for fans. So welcome to our Canadian fans and our Australian fans as well.
I can't do an Australian accent. My Australian accent ends up being like, sounds like somebody from Wales or something.
Oh, I have got a hilarious work story about the Welsh accent. I'll tell it briefly because this is casual watch talk, but I was away for a work trip, and a colleague of mine, it was quite warm where we were. We were in northwest Arkansas. Mm-hmm. It was quite warm where we were. And my colleague turned to me and says, "Oh, it's a bit knit, like K-N-I-T. And I said, what?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I said, yeah. What do you mean it's a bit knit? He says, "Well, that's a UK terminology, isn't it?" So I was racking my brains, and I said,
Doesn't it mean that you get something stolen? Or is that...
That's nicked.
Nicked. That's okay, nicked. Okay. That's what I thought. Okay, all right.
Britishisms.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm sort of thinking about this all day, and in the end I said, where are you getting this it's a bit knit from? Anyway, it turns out he's a big Tom Jones fan, or his mum was a big Tom Jones fan.
So he
plays me this clip of a Tom Jones song, and it's live at the Flamingo in Las Vegas. And Tom Jones, before the song plays, he does a little bit of a... You know, welcomes the audience and says, mm-hmm. you know, all this. And he says, "Oh, it's, I'm in Las Vegas and it's really warm, isn't it?" Like, so that's like a common Welsh phrase, is to say, like, "Isn't it?" Like, after a,
okay.
Isn't it?
Okay.
So my colleague interpreted this as, "It's a bit knit." So I was absolutely beside myself laughing. And I said to him, I said, how many years have you been telling this story? So it was just hilarious.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. No, there are some that I can't follow. Like I was talking about there's some that I can't follow, there's some that I can. So Australia, Canada, welcome.
Yeah. And then so people in Hong Kong, Ireland and Netherlands, it's all to play for. They're the next three.
All right. Perfect.
So welcome to everyone.
Perfect.
And welcome to all of our international listeners.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll try not to make fun of anyone's accent, because ours are just as bad. So
just realize that
from the start, like the way that we pronounce stuff. And so we always try to pronounce stuff correctly, but it's not always going to happen. And what I find with the internet is we and a lot of watch guys have this. We end up reading it and we don't ever hear anybody say it. So like we could make up the way to say a watch brand and then other people be running around saying it incorrectly. This is what could happen, because we read it and we think, oh, okay, it's with an S, or it's you pronounce the P or something.
I did this very early on in a video, and it's still live on the internet, and I should really take it down. But the first time I ever reviewed a Rolex, mm-hmm. they have a parachrome hairspring, but when you look at it, I was like, is that Parcheron? Is it CH?
Oh, because you pronounce it the ch sound.
Yeah, because I was thinking, and so I said like Parsharam or something ridiculous. So I shamed myself. But the amount of times, like you say,
No,
murdering
exactly.
watch names with Sam and Chris.
Yeah, it's absolutely. That's what we do here. So it's good.
Awesome. Well, let's kick it off with watch obsessions, as always. Have you had a watch obsession this week, Chris?
My watch obsession this week, well, I continue to hang on to the One Watch Challenge.
Yay.
So we're at I'm at day 27, so we're coming down to it, and I think I'm on strap change 3. I'm back to the back to that Miltat rubber, that's just so great. These are great if you haven't pick one up. So I had it on a Campagnato elastic, but then I went outside and I did some yard work, and I don't know whether I got some sticky plant stuff in it as well as some dirt. I mean, I just destroyed it. So I had to throw that in the washing machine. So I didn't switch to that.
And which watch is it again, Chris, for the listeners?
Yeah, so I've got a Bell & Ross GMT. That's the V293 GMT. It came out 2017, was it announced in Basel, I think? Yeah, 2017 Basel. Picked it up in 2018. So it's I think I'm going on past my two-year anniversary for this. So,
wow.
And then we'll talk about it, but we can talk about it later. Talk about it now. But I had your Walbrook strewn across the bench this week. So that was another session.
I think we should talk about it now. I definitely think we should talk about it now. I really appreciate that. Yeah. Whilst I was traveling this week, Chris, if anybody's not familiar, back to Walbrook watch on Kickstarter. I did a review on the channel, and I love the design of the watch, but they put this Miota, the 8015, I think, movement in it.
Correct, yeah.
So noisy. I mean, I joked about it on the channel. You'll have to see the joke in the review, but and it also didn't have hacking, and it was such a letdown. It was such a shame for a great designed watch like that. So we upgraded the movement to a clone of the 9015.
Yeah. So a clone movement of the, well, it was actually supposed to be a clone of the ETA that would drop in there as well. But needless to say, it was, so I have some disappointment, a little disappointment. So I thought that when something is cloned, that it would be an exact replica of the thing. And so we throw this around like movements cloned. I feel like when people say that, it's a size comparison. So the movement dropped in, it was exactly the right size.
Okay.
The hands were the right size, everything functioned, but it only winds clockwise. Even though it has that whole gear train mechanism on the back. Now, I think it's a lot quieter than the cheapest Miota. You have to be the judge. But I was like, well, we've come too far in the whole transfer.
So it is a clone of a 9015 then, because that winds clockwise as well then, rather than ETA.
Okay, yeah. So it's a lot quieter. So you'll have to, like I said, you have to be the judge of that. It doesn't feel like a little kid toy. But like I said, it is a Chinese-made cloned movement. Now, on the positive side, when you say Chinese-made clone movement and you put it on the time grapher, you get a little nervous. And I put it on the time grapher. This is stock out of the box. So, Sam, you got it from like a reputable. You bought it from Esslinger.
Yes.
Is that how you say it? So, yeah, not an eBay seller. Not like you had no idea where it was coming from. So they, they said it was a Chinese movement, and out of the box, put it on the time grapher. It was running zero, perfect time, dial down.
Wow.
And then there was only about a 7 second difference between that and crown down, I believe it was, something like that. So like the biggest difference in timing was about 7 seconds, which is, I mean, maybe the one you got was great. A lot of people say that. I find that these are more accurate than, let's say, a 7S26 Seiko movement. And I've seen many a Sega movement not do 7 seconds and be up in like the 15 second range from, I mean, I have my Sega Turtle is, I think, 15 seconds between dial up and crown up kind of thing, for difference. So movement's running great. And the hardest part, and if you're not a member of our Facebook group, definitely, this is almost worth it. Check over there. I posted a picture of the drill press in action. This very scary picture. So it comes with a metal movement ring, right? But the metal movement ring, it doesn't allow. So because of the fit, I wanted to place the dial on it, and I wanted to not have to push the movement through the metal ring, because it was fitting perfect. Well, in order to tighten the screws on the dial feet, I needed to make a couple little access holes. So that's why I did that. So then I could get everything set perfect. And the other reason I did this is because I had, like, I didn't know whether it would work, you know, sort of like, if you're manufacturing this, you just know that this movement ring is going to work with this movement, was going to work with this dial. Well, I didn't. So I gave myself some access so that I could make sure that the dial was perfectly centered and nice and tight to the case and the watch and the movement and everything. So that worked out quite well. And then you were panicked about the hands.
Yeah, because the hands are quite flat. They haven't got a bevel in the middle. Mm-hmm. They looked thin, although they have got a decent application of loom.
Yeah, yeah, no. The hands were no issue. I had to tweak them for the height once, but that watch has a double dome sapphire, so had plenty of space for the hands, you know, for the seconds hands, like you would... You know, you might run into like the second hands dragging on a smaller or flat crystal, but didn't have any issue there.
Did you manage to repurpose the roulette date wheel?
No, that is only, I looked, that's only going to be for a Miyota movement, is how, yeah, that mechanism.
Oh, that's awesome. And yeah. I think that they have actually upgraded this movement, Walbrook, now, which is a bit cheeky for all the people that backed it on Kickstarter, but their production version has a 8013 or something. This is where,
like,
I get
the next
the,
step up. Yeah, yeah, like the next step up, whatever the next step up. They really should go to the 9000 series, I mean, if they wanted to make it so that you could actually, like, do some regulation to it. I mean, I feel like if you get the cheapest of the cheap, whether it's Seiko, whether it's Citizen, Miyota, you know, even like a basic TA, if you're not going to do anything to it, it's like no one's going to spend time to regulate it, because it's not, you know, it hasn't been gone over. It feels like, you know, would you spend time redoing the fuel map in your Toyota Camry or in your, you know, Porsche Carrera, whatever?
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
really
sort
interesting.
Sort of to start with, you know. So I'm excited. Yeah, excited to get it. It's on the winder. It's on a winder right now. I'm just letting it sort of settle out. I think it's like plus 2 seconds the other time I checked. So 2 seconds a day. We'll see if it calms down, and then get it back on wrist. But
yeah.
Hand wind, pop out, stop seconds, hacking seconds.
Yeah, because I really like that watch. The design of it's stunning. If nobody's been listening to the podcast, it's basically designed based on Neil Armstrong's watch that he mm-hmm. actually wore,
yeah,
which was this Walbrook Skin Diver.
I did a quick, I popped it on, I did a quick shot of it on Instagram because I have my Bell & Ross on, very aviation inspired, both of those, and the Walbrook as well. Lots of that pilot watch DNA. And so over on my Instagram, Everyday Mastery, I popped a picture of both of them side by side, and you can really tell. I looked and I was like, wow, these are very, there's a lot of similarity here. There's a lot of DNA that share that pilot watch aesthetic. So very cool.
Yeah, they've
very
done
cool
an excellent job of the, you should check my review out on YouTube as well. It's just an excellently designed watch. Well, considering that we've been talking about you had the Walbrook, which was my newest watch, but as I was doing the One Watch Challenge, I've been wearing my Breitling B1, which after traveling with it for a week, this is the best watch I've ever traveled with. It's an Annie Digiwatch from the 90s, Breitling, but the alarm is extremely loud.
Nice.
So it really wakes you up. It's easy to set the time. It's the quartz movement is highly accurate. It's got a illuminated, the Annie Digi is illuminated. I just love this watch. It is already pre-scratched, so I didn't ever have
nice.
To panic.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a everyday, it's perfect everyday watch for Sam.
Yeah, and but Chris, you've been monitoring mainly, as I've been away this week, you've been monitoring other people doing their One Watch challenges on the group, haven't you? So mm-hmm. people have been posting yeah. about their experiences.
Yeah, one that was it was interesting is, and I think it was Chris or, and I don't want to get this wrong, someone posted which watch we'd be going to immediately upon the end of the challenge. That's what I'm kind of curious about.
Yeah, I thought Bobby on the group as well. It was mm-hmm. quite interesting because he's been wearing his Omega and he's got an amazing watch collection, everything from Nautilus right through to, you know, a Reverso, Jaeger-LeCoultre Reverso. He's got a Vacheron Constantin watch mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. he's chose his Seamaster, an Omega mm-hmm. Seamaster, which is, that's one of your personal favorites, isn't it? That dial layout, that sort of military.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not a fan of the numerals on the GMT for that one, but I definitely, yeah, I mean, it's a classic dial layout for Omega Seamaster for sure.
And it was funny that he was saying that he mentally planned out the 30 days of wearing mm-hmm. this watch, and actually he didn't read a lot of watch publications and wasn't obsessing about other new watches and stuff like that. And I think I found that as well. I've not been as, you know, because you're kind of concentrating on the one watch. It's a really good experiment for anyone to do because you really work out whether you like a watch or not, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think it sort of solidifies a couple of things. And I think that question of like, what will you be going to next? You know, if you have an immediate answer for this, and, you know, we'll bring everybody on. We'll try to do a video episode and see if we can get everybody's sort of feedback on this. But the big takeaway for me has been life is too short for just one watch, I think. So I'm looking forward to, so now I have the problem where you notice stuff that, you know, like when you're, again, with cars, when you're driving around in the SUV of a particular type, and then all you see is those SUVs or whatever, you know, that all you mm-hmm. see is this particular car, whatever that phenomenon's called. I know it has an actual scientific name.
Like what I'm getting, bias also.
Yep, exactly. Yep. But what I'm getting at is, I have seen, there's been like three watch YouTubers that have done something on Zin, and I have hid my Zin 104 from me, and I'm like, I almost ripped it. I was like, that's going to be my first. Going back to the white tile Zin 104, which is
yeah, it's funny. So I was good. Watching. I'm glad to see the Slender Wrist is back on YouTube, although he's renamed his channel. And forgive me, I've completely forgotten what he's named it. It's called like Times Squared or
Time
something.
Squared. Yeah. Square Time or Times Squared. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did a collab with him. Glad to see him back on YouTube. He's had a break for several months now, and you should watch it, the reason why he had a break and why he came back. But his one of his first videos out of the block was. He was talking about a Zin. I think he was talking about his ideal watch collection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He mentioned a couple. He mentioned a couple, and then I think Teddy Balbazar, mentioned just done a review of a Zin. So kind of back in the spotlight, and it's definitely made me jealous for the end of the one. Sorry, Bell and Ross GMT. You are my everyday watch, but. Gotta have some fun.
Yeah, and that's and the Slender Wrist was Alessandro. I forgot mm-hmm. to say his name before. Mm-hmm. Well, let's dive. Oh, I haven't done my watch obsession.
Yeah, yeah, let's, yeah.
Let's fire
it. I thought you covered it.
I still really like the look of this Christopher Ward super compressor. There's just mm-hmm. something about it. Mm-hmm. And I think Robert got one.
Robert, we had one. Somebody on the Facebook group got one.
It really looks awesome, but this is going to sound stupid to most people, but I've talked about it on the podcast loads of times, and is I am obsessed with the date on a watch. I just like having the date on a watch, which is weird, Chris, because my Breitling obviously is Anidigi, so it has the date, but the date isn't on the immediate front screen. You scroll through to it. I have
Okay.
And I don't often scroll through to see the date on the watch. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, this is why I didn't like the Tudor. I wish it had the date on a watch. So now I'm wondering whether... I'm torn about whether I should buy the super compressor or not, whether it would bother me it didn't have the date.
It doesn't have the date, yeah.
Yeah, but I've wore that Speedmaster for years and it never had the date on it. But
yeah, it's suddenly like important. And also for me, it's not so much if the watch has a date, it's if they're going to mess, if they're going to put the date symmetrical, if they're going to, you know, if it's going to be done well, if it's going to be color matched, if it's, you know, this sort of thing. Like, because you can, I think, if you add a date to the watch, you have a design challenge where you can really mess up a dial. Like, I've seen watches where they just do this cutout at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
This sort of like square cutout at 4 o'clock, and the number's kind of not, is the number's not horizontal in there. It's off at a, you know, 45 degree angle. And you're like, you guys could have. You could have done so much more here. So, you know, so there's a lot of damage that I think you can do to the design when adding a date. That's my only take. But I tend to feel like dive watches, I would rather have a dive watch without a date.
I like a dive watch with the date. I think Phoebus do this really well, where they have like matching date wheels. And then, of course, that watch that I reviewed, that Razor, the Rise watch, that had a color coded date wheel, which I don't know why more people don't do it. Seiko could easily do it, but they just choose not to, and I don't know why. But I've actually got another Phoebus on the coming in on the way to the channel as well, which is going to be good. And speaking of watches that I've got coming into the channel, I'm being sent a very interesting one from a watch brand called Constella.
Okay.
They've made a watch, and they're going to be knocking this out. I think it's going to be on Kickstarter, say around the $400 mark.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dive watch, very nice dive watch aesthetic to it. But the dial is a porcelain enamel dial, and they've put almost... like, it's got like tiny flecks in it. I haven't seen one in person. I'm getting a prototype sent into the channel. This isn't one that I get to keep, but it's it looks incredible. If the pictures are doing it justice, it looks almost as if you're gazing into the night sky, as if you're looking up. And their logo looks like a constellation map. So I'm interested in getting that one. And then, as well, Chris, hopefully this week, fingers crossed, I'm getting a look at the new Veya watch.
Yes.
I'm getting the D5. Yeah. And this is their first dive watch, and it looks spectacular. They've done their own video on YouTube of this, but I think this is going to be their launching pad. I think they've got just about everything that you could ask for in a dive watch. They've got both the Swiss and then the Japanese movement, if you choose. Have you seen these, Chris? Have you had a look?
They went. We talked about it when we had them on the podcast. They went with the dial, you know, the several dial options that they were kind of going for. I definitely appreciate offering a vintage loom and a non-vintage loom. For those of us, because I definitely would go for a non. I'd sort of make my own scratches and dents, so to speak.
Yes.
But they have them both, and several different dial designs. So very, very cool.
Yeah, I like that as well. And also, as well, just to go back to come full circle on here, they have a date or a dateless version as well.
I think
this pretty much ticks most boxes of people that they listen to the fans. They really do listen to them, and they've done a whole half an hour YouTube video themselves that explains in great detail what every single design choice is, which I think is quite novel, isn't it, for a micro brand to do that? Because normally we're guessing at the reason they've made decisions about certain design elements.
Yeah, I was very surprised when they provided data. You know, they said, we were just asking. I mean, definitely it's a good one to go back. If you have any interest in VAIR, go back to the podcast maybe 10 ago that we had them on, where they were like, well, we're going to do this because 46% of the folks that responded said that they wanted it this way. And, you know, and just like directly. So their marketing, their research is driving their production, and that is just something you are not going to get with any large watch company.
Now, and the two guys that make the watches, that design the watches, Ryan and Reagan,
Hey, it's Chris from the Casual Watch Talk podcast. As our longtime listeners know, we often talk about cars here on the pod, and that's no coincidence. Like a lot of mechanical watch lovers, we're both into cars and racing. A couple years ago, I curated a collection of automotive-inspired straps and started the Campionato Club. Campionato Club watch straps celebrate the rich history of automotive liveries with their inspired colors. Available in a single pass NATO, two piece, and our new super comfy elastic NATO. Check out Campionato Club on the web. That's championship in Italian, CampionatoClub.
Email them, they'll reply to you. Yeah. They are the face, the makers, and everything of these watches. Yeah. And they're completely open about the supply chain, about the vision for the company. Great, great pair of guys. Yeah. Well, we've got some pretty interesting news stories, I think, to go through. So I think this will be the lion's share of the show. We'll be going over the news. But before we do that, let's just pause for a very quick ad break. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Casual Watch Talk. Well, Chris, I want to get your opinion on some of the news stories that have been happening this week.
Excellent.
First off, we usually like to do a few on the business side of the watch industry. And I don't know if you read this is from Watch Pro, but Watches of Switzerland have bought Analog Shift, which was an online pre-owned reseller. Now, if anybody's thinking who were Analog Shift, I always think of them as they sold pre-owned watches, but they had some of the best photography, I think. Their adverts, the watch pictures took up the entire half of the page, so you really got an extremely intricate look.
Yeah,
I believe they had a blog as well, but apparently they used to supply pre-owned watches to Watches of Switzerland. That was their channel for pre-owned watches. Now, they are a niche player. They're nowhere near as big as Watchfinder, but I'm guessing do you think this is as a result of COVID, Chris, because the pre-owned market's just gone crazy?
Yeah, that makes sense. And it certainly, if you have... I think Analog Shift is sort of tapped into something. When you mentioned it, I didn't off the top of my head remember it, but now that I'm looking, I definitely remember. They use a lot of textured backgrounds, and they feature, I'd have to say, with these photographs, they feature every used watch that they have. So I think that direction is going to be more, not only the way to go, but it's going to be more prized, like you said, in this era of COVID where you can't go pick this up. So instead of like if you're going to sell online, if you're going to sell vintage used watches, in a condition, if you're going to sell them online, why would you do the Amazon 1000 pixel square on a white background? I mean, let's showcase, let's have some texture. This one they have one picture of the Cartier tank where they have, this kind of pink and green. It's cool. It's super cool. And then it really highlights, and all their pictures are fantastic. So, I think it's a smart business move to go collect some of these sites that can really capture the sales for used watches.
Yeah. And also if you're doing a search, you can actually search the watches that they've already sold. They don't remove them, which is really cool, especially being a YouTuber, because they do such a good job of explaining them and putting some of the measurements and statistics and a look at the watch that it allows you to. Sometimes those aren't available for rare watches,
Yeah, you get a little story with it, and that's. I mean, and again, we've mentioned this before, but like these, these brands, bigger brands, I mean, they have to start thinking about in not only the online market, but in this online market plus this COVID market that we have going on, where you're not, you know, yes, it's great that you have a store in, you know, Times Square, but that's not going to get to the largest amount of folks. And then what do you give them if you can't offer the try this on, get this experience of this watch? You know, you have to really up your marketing game. And it looks like Analog Shift has done that enough to be acquired. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting step forward for them. Well, first of all, a big shout out to Fears Watches, of course. They've just released a new version of their watch, the Brunswick in gold. So they did a little tease on Instagram, I think. So Nicholas, a big shout out to him. I was again asking him whether he would consider doing... his watches are extremely high quality. His attention to detail that he puts into them, and they are certainly on the luxury side.
Mm, yeah.
One of the oldest watch companies in existence in the UK, I think, or still running, even though it had a brief pause. It's a fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
He's been on many podcasts, and he certainly came on ours, and we were fascinated to hear about it. But I'm hoping that he does something. I'm hoping that he does a range where there's one that's more on the affordable side, because he's got the luxury ones sewn up. He's done a fantastic job of them.
Mm-hmm.
He did used to do a quartz, entry-level quartz, but it'd be nice to see something, maybe a sports watch in the, you know, maybe $1,000 to $1,500 mm-hmm. mark. I'd love mm-hmm. to see that, because mm-hmm. they've not only has it got an excellent history for his watches, but the way that he runs the brand, his passion for watches as well is fantastic. So
yeah,
big shout out to Nicholas.
It's definitely one of those. It's one of those brands, and it's one of those. I mean, this is certainly one of those watches and one of those brands that makes you feel like, this is, if you get this for someone, or, you know, if this was a, you know, wedding present or an engagement or a special occasion, something like that, or it makes you feel like this is like your one watch that has this history built in. It's fascinating, because I think the watch itself are just exquisitely made. And you know, it really puts a package together as far as something that's exquisitely made, that, you know, that you feel, you get that evocative feel, like, you know, this is it. You have something that you should cherish, which is very
yeah.
cool.
And it's amazing as well, like, when hearing Nicholas talk about, every design choice is made with generations in mind, instead of a watch
right.
that is tied to a certain time period. And if you've mm-hmm. ever seen one, then you would probably agree that it's got somewhat of a timeless design to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Focused on that timeless design, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, next news story is, have you seen Yema? Obviously Yema are doing some pretty interesting things. I've never seen one in person yet, but a lot of reviews you see are that they're spot on quality. I did actually try mm-hmm. and get one in for review, but when COVID started kicking off, I actually purchased a Yema, and mm-hmm. they were having some supply chain issues, which weren't, I'm sure it wasn't down to them, but it meant that they couldn't stick to their shipping timelines and things like that. So I ended mm-hmm. up cancelling mine because something else came up and I needed
them. Were you buying it through? I don't think you were buying it direct from them.
I was, yeah. In fact, I think they only sell direct. I could be wrong, but they mainly sell direct. And go on their website, they offer the discounts on there. But they've gone back to a model which I think is unusual for a well-established watch brand to do Kickstarter afterwards. Normally, you think of Kickstarter being the launch of a watch brand, don't you, Chris?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, there are pros and cons to doing it this way, because I think if they feel like they're not getting enough exposure to sort of, it's an interesting choice for Yema to do this, because I feel like they could do their own pre-order watch. You know, like they're gonna end up paying a lot of money Like, if this Kickstarter is successful, they're going to end up paying a lot of money to Kickstarter to do this for them.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I feel like you take maybe half that money and you invest in your own website to be able to just handle pre-orders.
Yeah, I think they're that's a good point you made there, because I think they're trying everything at the moment. So they've tried pre-orders on their website, which they did with that French Royal Air Force. Sorry to everyone, Royal Air Force wise. It's the French Air Force. They did that pre-order. So they tried that. They then tried a limited edition version. I don't know if you picked up on that. They've got this limited edition version watch that was a pre-order. So they've tried pre-orders. They've tried limited editions. Now they're going back to Kickstarter again.
Back to Kickstarter.
Yeah. Right. So, but these two watches, they look pretty awesome. They've one's steel with a bronze bezel, and then the other one is a completely bronze one of their GMT watches. So they do look nice. I'll be interested to see. Like you say, I wonder if, because they're an established watch brand, whether I think these are going to be Kickstarter exclusive as well. So they've kind of done the two for one. They've done the limited edition and it being Kickstarter. So I think it'll be, we'll have to keep a close eye on Yemma.
Wait, now, they've had, and they've done successful Kickstarters in the past. I'm trying to find the current one for 3 days ago. Here we go. Oh, I see that the blue and bronze. That looks good. That looks sharp.
It does look good, yeah.
It looks good. It looks good. I'm not usually a fan of the gilt dial, but that looks good with the blue. They've had outstanding success. I just looked at one of their old Kickstarters from 2019 that was like, 200,000 goal, 200,000 pound goal, and they had almost a million. Yeah. So clearly they can be successful over there. Maybe they're just trying to throw stuff out. Because my take, I definitely, if I was successful, if I started a successful brand on Kickstarter, I feel like, or restarted in this case, Yemma's restarting their brand. I feel like I'd want to move to not have to pay fees to any third party seller as fast as possible.
That it's an interesting point in that as well, isn't it? So we'll keep an eye on that. Next story is, again, from WatchPro, and I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before, but a lot of the stories I get from WatchPro, I just love the way they write, and some of their historical pieces are awesome.
Definitely,
when they go into
definitely in my feed. Definitely in my feed all the time, yeah.
The new... Frederick Constant have made a watch for Red Bar, the watch group.
I saw that.
It looks... what do you think of the look, Chris? I mean, I think
it looks great. I have been a fan. I am a fan of Frederic Constant, owned by Citizen. Their whole take is, we're going to give you luxury Swiss watchmaking at affordable prices. And I feel like that's super trite to say, basically the tagline of every other micro brand startup, but clearly, they've been pulling this off. I mean, they have some, they have some fantastic in-house movements that they're using for different stuff, and they've come out with this sports watch. Now, what is the model of the sports? What is this one?
It's the High Life collection.
The High Life, right?
So it's it's called the Red Bar High Life Automatic, but it's their existing High Life.
It's that integrated bracelet. If you hadn't seen it, check it out. It's an integrated bracelet, and then they offer a couple different complications. The open heart one, I could take it or leave it. But they offer a is it a perpetual? It is the
perpetual calendar.
Calendar,
yes.
Oh. So, and let's digress for a second. Let's talk about perpetual calendars for a second, because over on YouTube, Federico was talking about watches that you shouldn't start with. Did you catch this one?
I did not, no.
Yeah, so he had a good one that was just like, if you're first starting out on watches that maybe you shouldn't start with. It was interesting discussion. And one of the watches that you probably shouldn't start with is a perpetual calendar. And for a bunch of reasons that I'll repeat here, but this is interesting to me because we've been talking about a one watch challenge. Like, is this the watch that you can wear every day? This sort of thing. So part of the reason why you wouldn't necessarily want to go with something like this that has all these complications, you know, this, you know, day, date, month, year, leap year, moon phase, is very difficult to set. So if you notice on the High Life, I see two recessed buttons on the left and the right. I assume there's going to be one on the top as well. So a perpetual calendar is difficult to set. You have to set it at a certain time. You can't crunch through it. You definitely have to read the manual on how to set it. And the other thing that's, I love the look of this and I would love to have one of these, but I feel so bad because you have more of a tendency that you would want to just leave it on a watch winder so that it was ready to go.
Right.
Because if you thought, okay, I'm gonna have this perpetual calendar and it's going to be my dress watch. Well, if that thing isn't living on a watch winder and it's not ready to go, I just cannot imagine like standing there in a suit with, you know, 22 minutes before I'm about to leave, trying to press buttons and move crowns and try to correctly set the date. I would be terrified of doing it. And that's what I feel like I'd end up doing it. So sort of an interesting sort of side conversation about this. I'd love to have one of these, but I think it would have to be my everyday watch.
Speaking of Citizen, just a quick shout out to A Blog to Watch who did essentially a retrospective, I would say, or the history of Citizen using titanium in their watches. Now, I've said this on the channel before. Of all the titanium watches that I've ever seen, I think Citizen makes some of the best titanium-cased watches, mm-hmm. and they have this Duratec, which is their own proprietary coating, I think it is, or maybe a treatment that's applied to the titanium. And they've done an incredible breakdown of just why it is so good and all of the engineering that goes into it. So I would definitely check that out on A Blog to Watch. And another thing, a quick highlight on A Blog to Watch as well, is you'll have to check out, they've done a piece on, have you seen this Rafael Nadal limited edition Richard Mille watch?
I caught one picture of it, yes.
So it's strung like a tennis racket. I don't know if the movement is suspended by these things, but it's got, they've made it look like a tennis racket, essentially, which is an incredible feat of engineering, but I guess it's a little bit of a gimmick. But then I suppose Richard Mille, that's their shtick, isn't it, with them?
Right.
These incredibly customized, highly precision engineered watches. I mean, it does look cool. It does look cool. Well, one last thing I wanted to discuss, sort of last topic here, last story, was about Braemont. Now, in the past, I have made some comments about Braemont. Braemont is a brand that I would love to own their watches and be a big advocate for them. But I feel like, apart from, I mean, we've made little jokes about a few of the marketing mistakes they've made in the past. And we had a little bit of a chuckle about the Rolling Stones watches that they made that were like, I just feel like their pricing is, it's high for what they are. And my only complaint with them is that their pricing seems to be off.
I think for me, they offer those sort of like the squadron watches and the special custom stuff for military. And I feel like they roll that into their marketing a little too gratuitously. For example, like you've seen and held and owned a custom Breitling that was made for, well, Breitling doesn't need to go on television, Instagram, you know, marketing, et cetera, and say like, oh, well, we make them for, you know, these things. So a little bit too much of that for me.
Yeah. Well, this is what shifted my thinking about them this week, as I was having a conversation with another chap who runs a podcast. I'm going to try and get him on our podcast as well. He runs, he essentially is a currently serving member of the British RAF, and his role, or part of his role, or a job that he took on, was to buy watches for squadrons from Braemont.
Oh,
so it sounds like they are very generous with the armed with the military. So they actually, so he owns several Bremont watches that he managed to get at. The Bremont are very generous with the pricing to the military. So it did kind of change my view of them as well.
Okay,
although
yeah.
you kind of think, well, are they, is the cost offsetted because, you know, normal
they get to,
guy off yeah. the block has to
right.
has to buy them at full whack. But so it kind of changed my view. I know that you can certainly pick them up. And this is the, and I know that probably people think, well, it's, they really highly engineer the ETA movements, which they absolutely do. But if you're thinking about Bremont and whether the retail prices are worth it, I would encourage you to look at the resale values. Because what do you think, Chris? This is one of the easiest ways to work out whether a watch is worth its retail by what
right.
you can sell it for.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. If you see that those are only being resold for, you know, less than for like a 40% off, then what is that, you know, what is the original value? And I don't know, are there any, I wonder if there's any, I'm sure there's resellers in the United States. I'd be curious.
Well, Chrono 24 has a few. Yeah, Chrono 24 yeah. really has a few Bremonts, yeah, and you can yeah. get them at a significant discount.
I was wondering if you have any dealers for Bremont in the United States.
Well, there must be, because
there must be.
I think TGV went to a Bremont. Mm-hmm. Went to a Bremont. He did a collaboration with them.
Yeah, yeah. I think there are. Yeah, I think there are some that have them and sell them. So, I think they're in that land where, yes, the retail is high, but maybe we're giving them too much because we just think like, okay, that people are just paying that retail price. When in actuality, if you went to an authorized dealer in the United States and you were looking for a particular model and they could get it for you and it was, you know, that you could negotiate that price. I think a lot of times there's a lot of luxury Swiss watches that get that sort of reputation, like, oh, well, it's just a Salida movement, but it's, you know, $3,400. But in actuality, no one's paying that for the watch.
Yeah, yeah. So it's an interesting point. The reason that I bring them up is they've done a watch recently. They've just bought out a new watch that looks, it looks fantastic. They've really hit this design spot on, and they've done a, I don't know whether you'd call it a collaboration.
Okay.
Maybe the listeners will have to make their own mind up about this, but they've done a watch where they've partnered with Rolls-Royce. Now, they're not doing a car here. Rolls-Royce have developed a electric airplane, which apparently is nothing new, but they're going to try and surpass a speed record. Apparently, the current speed for electric-powered aircraft is 213 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
whereas they're going to try and get over 300 miles an hour, which obviously mm-hmm. has implications
yeah.
right through aviation.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's fascinating to point that out. Yeah, there's now electric powered aircraft, and this, and as the battery technology gets even better, more density per weight, will be, the hope is that some general aviation can be handled by electric motors and these super high powered batteries. And Rolls-Royce has been a manufacturer of jet engines if most people didn't know that, but
oh yeah,
yeah, for years. So interesting collaboration. The watch is very, very cool looking.
They have a Breitling caliber associated with it. I'm going to assume it's an ETA, but it looks like they have added a lot of aftermarket enhancements to it,
mm-hmm.
it looks stunning. So they've, not only have they sort of named the watch the Iron Bird, which I'm not sure if that's the name of the plane.
And it's I thought originally it was I-R-O-N, it's I-O-N, Ion.
Yeah.
Ion Bird. Yeah.
Ion Bird, yeah, which yes. is quite a clever play on words. But they've not only have they done this, created this watch, but they're also have made parts for the plane. So they've made latches for the canopy and also a stopwatch for
inside
the cluster.
They're sort of their manufacturing it was teamed up. Oh, that's interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, but this is, again, this watch is, it's expensive. You're looking at, you know, not shy of $6,000, yeah. $5,800.
The bracelet adds a lot there. That's, what is that? 3, 8, 9, that's $500 extra for the bracelet?
Yeah.
That seems pricey. I usually see, I don't know, watches this maybe because just the percentage of the, so on bracelet, on their website, $6,395, so $6,400. Yeah, I usually see sort of the bracelet option being in the $350 range, and here yeah. the bracelet option is a $500 option.
I just don't know how many watches Braemont sell to the general public. I mean, actually, I could probably research this and look on Companies House, because with them mm-hmm. being based in the UK, they would have to release their financial figures. So maybe I'll do a bit of research. Mm. It's a good looking watch.
Yeah. I just think it's a little priced a little too high. Is that what it
yeah,
is?
Yeah, I think so. I think yeah. they've put a lot of aftermarket engineering into it, yeah. but it's certainly a brand that I've taken a second look at, knowing how yeah. generous they are to the British military. But yeah. again, I suppose I'd need to think about what the sweet spot for a Braemont would be, because I think that they're sort of priced around IWC prices, would you say? I can't right. think of another right. comparable.
Yeah. yeah. And I always feel, I mean, IWC, their used market commands, you know, so you're not getting a discount like you would maybe like in Breitling.
Yes.
So a used IWC is maintaining its value, maybe only losing 15-20% of new. So there's that. But I don't think I would walk in and buy a new IWC, because I feel like there's 10-15% of overhead here. Just like with the Braemont. Like I want to say, if this was, and I don't even, I mean, so it is a special edition, so it's sort of tough to gauge. But like, if this is just if regular everyday Braemont was in the $2,900 on leather and $3,200 on bracelet, it'd just be like, no, you know, you're right. You're not, you don't feel like you're paying for extra brand.
Yeah. And I think with Breitling's new guard, they have got some reasonably priced watches now. So I suppose Braemont is aviation, Breitling arguably aviation. Although Breitling obviously have the economies of scale going for them that Braemont don't. I mean, mm-hmm. Breitling could probably pump mm-hmm. out, you know, many more thousands of yeah. watches. But
and both, you know, chronometer spec. So they're both, I was just checking that. They're both, you know, they're both, any of your Breitling is going to be a cost spec. What's it, yeah. 2 seconds a day?
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, we definitely have discussed this, you know, and this is sort of the quandary for most, you know, most folks getting into watches. You know, is that when you get to certain brands, is that $2,000-$4,000 over the spec sheet? Is it, you know, are you really getting $4,000 more? And we're not even talking, don't even bring Rolex in the conversation.
Yeah.
Just from a sapphire crystal, obviously display back, obviously high grade Swiss movement that's, you know, either made by, or, you know, ETA or in-house, or, you know, the beyond the spec sheet.
Yeah.
Then you start really looking at, like, all right, is it, you know, when you get to $3,000 beyond any watch that you could get for that, you're like, oh, is this
maybe we should do it. Maybe we should do a YouTube series called Beyond the Spec Sheet. Yeah, that would make quite a good name.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, it's interesting. I'm certainly gonna. I wish them well, Braemont. And it sounds like that. I mean, they've been going for a number of years now. So yeah. I just think, when I think of British brands, I think like Farah, for mm-hmm. example.
Farah, yeah.
They seem to be like spot on the money for what they are. Christopher Ward seem to be spot on the money right. for what they are.
Right. Right.
And I don't know whether I get that same feeling about Braemont, because they're obviously expensive, they've obviously are doing a lot additional to the movement, but they're not in, they're not like in a precious metal or something else that is usually one of the tricks for upping the price up. So yeah, I don't know. It's just one of them things, I guess, that I wish them well, but I don't know whether if I had the money, I feel like I would go in a probably another direction or maybe buy one. I have looked at buying one pre-owned before. They have a dive watch that has a very nice look to it, a previous model that is not far off a Tudor Black Bay 58, actually, but it does have the date, so they're coming full circle with my obsession with the date. But
there you go.
Anyway, well, guys, that was really interesting. I know normally we don't extended discussion on the news, but quite a lot had happened, which took me by surprise when I was researching this. But
so the week's going by like, you know, like minutes, and then not, and then wondering, like, is it still September? Yep, it's still September. So it's definitely the one watch challenge. Is nothing else has allowed me to mark the time of a month in during pandemic.
Yeah, we definitely will do that another video watch meetup. I'll organize it with Chris. Maybe we'll do it next week or the week after, but we'll make sure we give everyone plenty of notice. Well, guys, as always, we really appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next time on Casual Watch Talk. Thanks, guys. Bye.